Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It sounds like reggae, only faster. It's got the energy of punk, but a beat you can dance to, and it's had more comebacks than the Rolling Stones. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and ahead today, the endlessly renewable sound of ska. And later, the Milwaukee-based funk and soul band called Kings Go Forth. But we begin with ska. Like the word itself, the music is short and punchy. And it arrived in three waves, beginning in the early 60s as a kind of grandfather of Jamaican reggae. It included this group, the Skatalites. The music then traveled to England in the 70s and gave birth to bands like The Specials, The Selector, and The English Beat. It came back again in the early 90s, this time in California. Now it seems there's another wave of interest in ska. Both The Specials and The English Beat are touring the U.S. this spring. And in a moment, we'll talk with two original members of The Specials. But first, let's get some perspective on this from Jennifer Davis. She's a journalist who's written extensively about ska, and in fact, was the singer in a ska band in Russia. She's on the line with us from Boulder, Colorado. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So, three waves of interest in ska, and now it seems to be building again. What's driving this revival, this renewal of interest?
Well, that's a good question. I think that ska music has always been kind of endlessly interesting to a lot of subcultures throughout the years. I think that there's been an expanded interest in groups from that period, if we're going to talk about the Specials or the two-tone bands of the late 70s and early 80s. In England, I think that there's been a kind of more interest in that sort of period lately, and a lot of these bands are kind of making a resurgence and reforming and touring.
And there's been a lot of interest, kind of substantial, sustained interest, not necessarily in New York City, but around New York City, in New Jersey and Long Island and places like that. Is it a regional thing, or do you see this across the country?
No, it's definitely a national thing. I think you'll have ska fans in every state of the union. I think it's a music that people listen to and often have a sort of instant reaction to, and if they love it, they love it for life, and they're very dedicated fans.
Okay, now that the life of this style goes all the way back to the 60s, and you know every time it seems to have faded away, it comes roaring back. What does it change with each kind of iteration? Has each successive wave of ska been somehow different?
Yeah, ska music was born in Jamaica in the early 60s, and it is a traditional Jamaican music born out of Jamaican culture, and that is kind of a mix of several different types of music. Obviously, traditional Jamaican mento, Caribbean calypso, and then it had some American influences as well, including American big band swing. That's where a lot of the horns and the horn parts come from, and early American R&B.
This is at about the time of Jamaican independence, right? So it's a period of kind of optimism and stuff. This seems to be, in its first form, party music.
Oh, yeah. And this was definitely the pop music of Jamaica. This wasn't any sort of subculture music at all. This was music that you would hear on the radio. And one of the main studios to produce, to start producing ska and the Skatalites, who you just played, was Studio One in Kingston. And they were kind of to Jamaica what Motown, I guess you could say, was to the U.S. At the same time.
Although I guess they came first, didn't they? Well, I guess it was around the same time.
Kind of all around the same time, honestly.
So, and ska eventually gives way to reggae, you know, which gets a little slower, the lyrics get a little heavier, more politicized and stuff. But there's this weird period in the mid-60s where you kind of catch ska and reggae sort of in mid-evolution. I've seen Desmond Dekker referred to as both a ska artist, I mean, and specifically his hit song, The Israelites, as mm-hmm. both a ska hit and as a reggae hit. Where do you place it?
Well, kind of the link between ska and reggae is a form called rocksteady.
Mm-hmm.
And I would place Desmond Dekker squarely in the rocksteady category. So it's kind of a bridge.
He's the missing link.
Kind of a bridge between ska and reggae. Rocksteady, as we know, ska music is really fast and very happy music. And honestly, it's pretty hard to sing to at times because it's so fast.
Mm.
And they slowed it down a little bit with rocksteady, keeping the kind of joy and happy beat of the ska, but making it kind of more easy for vocalists to sing.
And this was Desmond Dekker singing his international hit, The Israelites. Israelites was an international hit in 1968 for Jamaica's Desmond Dekker, the late ska, rocksteady, reggae artist. We're talking about ska, which has had various waves of musical influence in the West in over the last 40, 50 years. And we've been speaking with Jennifer Davis, the Colorado-based journalist and authority on the genre. And having looked a little bit at the first wave, born in Jamaica in the early 60s, let's talk a little bit about the second wave. And joining us here in the studio are two members of that era's perhaps most famous group, the Specials. Joining me here in the studio are bassist Horace Panter and drummer John Bradbury. Brad, Horace, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
You guys founded the Specials in 1977, Brad, in Coventry. What was it about this music from Jamaica that resonated with a bunch of kids in a depressed industrial town in England?
Well, you just summed it up, really. I mean, we were all in a situation where we're in a cosmopolitan city, all of us. you know, my friends at an early age were from the Caribbean and also from India, from the Asian continent as well. So kind of, and basically, the influences were always there. You know, your friends, you go to your friends' houses, you hear the music being played and so on and so forth. But as far as the working class sort of like was concerned at that point in time, it was very much sharing the same type of roots and you know, everybody sharing the same thing at the same time, really. So
that's... So, and Horace, did you have the same experience? Did you listen to bands like the Skatalites and Desmond Dekker and stuff as a kid?
No, I came to ska late. I mean, I wasn't born in Coventry. I came to Coventry in 1972. I lived in a small, dreamy market town where not a great deal happened except the radio, you know. So and the television, of course. So I grew up listening to Free and Fleetwood Mac,
mm-hmm.
And Booker T and the MGs. So, but it was like a different kind of dance music that I was interested in. So it wasn't until I got to Coventry and linked up with the people who eventually became the Specials that I started playing ska and reggae.
Now the ska was, as Jennifer was telling us, you know, kind of party music.
Hmm.
Reggae, much more politicized with its lyrics sometimes, and second wave ska, the stuff that you guys were playing in the Specials, also seemed to have a lot of kind of, if not political, at least social content and commentary to it. Brad, how did that happen? Was that a conscious thing?
We had writers in the band that were obviously conscious of the you know, the socio-political times, events within the times in the late 70s, and so they manifested themselves in the lyric. But I mean, in the lyric content of the of the tracks. But the thing about the music is, I've often found, is a calling card. You know, you really get a groove going. Mm-hmm. I mean, my roots are more in soul music. I mean, I was a Mod, you know, skinhead Mod, and then I was listening to the likes of Motown, Stax, and
I just want to say, when you say skinhead, you mean something different from what...
Totally, yeah, nothing
what
to
we mean.
Yeah, I know that, yeah. I mean, it's basically, you know, if you like, our music was a... the skinheads were like, basically, they were Mods. They were developers of the Mods. There was nothing at this point in time to do with all the rest.
And Mods being, you know, the kind
into
of...
into the dress code and everything else, and that's basically what it was. But... at that point in time, you know, the content of the lyrical content of the music mapped nicely onto the thing, the calling card side of things, the actual.
Well, you guys were the rhythm section, the bass and the drums.
We still are.
Yeah. So that groove, that beat is coming from your end of things.
I mean, with it being ska, you have to include all the instruments as the rhythm section. I mean, that's the thing that I find playing this music. It's like African drumming, but played on Western instruments. You know, everybody keeps the rhythm. The guitar is the metronome.
Those upstrokes, the
organ, the organ plays the congas.
It's like that Coltrane thing about the keyboard as 88 pieces of tuned percussion. That's the way I hear the rhythm coming through the keyboard. But we play with... get along fine with each other because we have other certain influences as well, you know, the soul influences, the rock influences. So to call us a ska band is not necessarily totally accurate. I mean, we've got a lot going in terms of, well, what we brought to the concept of the ska thing was a slightly more rocky.
Yes, I always say we're sort of like sort of three part Scatterlites, sort of one part Bob Me Up, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and one part The Clash.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
you
know, well, I mean,
because there was that punk element, and I think that goes through the lyrics as well, because that was a period of disaffection in England, and then reggae was like the music of disaffected youth in Jamaica, and whereas punk was the music of disaffected youth in England, and the two were sort of. We're sort of connected spiritually, or if you like.
Hence the term Two Tone, which was both the name of the Specials record label and came to be sort of the name given to this style of sort of interracial music, interracial socio-political commentary in the lyrics. A good example is this song called Ghost Town from the Specials. Band is The Specials, and the song is Ghost Town, one of a string of successful songs for the band in the late 70s, early 80s. Two of the members of The Specials who have reunited and are touring the States are with me today. Horace Panter is the group's bassist, and John Bradbury, Brad, is the drummer. They're playing tonight here in New York at Terminal 5. Jennifer Davis, the journalist, contributor to PopMatters.com, still with us on the line. Jennifer, the guys here in the studio were just wondering about what it's like to sing ska in Russia.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, it's so great to be on the phone with you. I wish I was in the studio. Well, you know, it's really funny because actually right before I got on the line with you, I was sending some instant messages to our former percussionist from Ska Jazz Review on Facebook, and he was saying, tell the Specials that I listened to them in 82 and 83 in the Soviet Union.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, because there was a whole sort of underground culture.
Samizdat, the cassettes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was called like Samizdats, right?
Right.
So
right.
The people would pass around recordings, and ska music has always been popular in Russia, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the beats of ska music, the emphasis on that, on the upbeat, that oompa oompa sound, is pretty similar to traditional Russian and Eastern European folk music.
Huh. Yeah, like, really like almost like polka, if you like.
Yeah,
if you like.
Yeah.
That's oompa kind of thing.
Yeah.
So were you guys aware that there was like this no. Underground cassette culture going on?
I had
no idea.
Idea. Jennifer, it's fantastic. It really is cool. Brad.
Just one thing about, we did a track later on with Special AK called Free Nelson Mandela, right, mm-hmm. which you might be familiar with. Well, it's an interesting thing about borders and music, because it was actually banned in South Africa, the track. But of course, it was played from countries across the borders and listened to by people in South Africa. And I would imagine similarly, you know, anything that was sort of likely, slightly socio-politically, use that phrase again, dodgy, you know, it transcends all these barriers and borders. And
it's like almost like the best thing you can do for a song is get it banned somewhere.
Yeah,
so, Jennifer, what were you doing in Russia, and what were you doing singing ska in St. Petersburg?
Well, I first went to Russia in 1996 because I was a Russian major and I went on study abroad. And those were the kind of heady, wild days of like the kind of gangster days, I guess, of Russian development, just 5 years after the fall of the Soviet Union. And it was an amazing time to be there. Mm-hmm. It really was. And I just loved it. And everything was so raw and so new, and people were so excited to meet an American. That has obviously changed.
Well, here's we actually have a little bit of Jennifer's band, St. Petersburg's Ska Jazz Review, to take us into the break. And we'll have more of our conversation on ska as we continue.
I just woke and the sun was shining. I just can't believe I spent my whole life.
In a moment, more of our look at the history and the fashion of ska. And then later, as we continue with Soundcheck, Kings Go Forth is a band that hails from Milwaukee and draws heavily on another classic sound from the 60s and 70s, soul. They'll play live in our studio.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
I know ska came first, but it's always struck me as reggae's little brother. Reggae loomed larger and hit harder. But ska is music's undead. No matter how often we pronounce it buried, you just can't kill it.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Stop your messing around. Better think of your future.
Back in 1979, the Specials had one of their seven top 10 UK hits with this song, A Message to You, Rudy. It's actually a cover of a 1967 song by a first wave ska artist named Dandy Livingstone.
It's time you straighten right out. Stop your running around, making trouble in the town. Message to you, Rudy.
And in the 90s, the third wave ska band Sublime quoted some of these lyrics from the same song.
Stop your messing around. Better think of your future. Time we straighten right out.
The song called DJs by Sublime. We're back on Soundcheck talking about multiple waves of ska. I'm John Schaefer, joined by two of the original members of the Specials who are back and touring in the States. Bassist Horace Panter, drummer John Bradbury. On the line with us is Jennifer Davis, who's written about the history of ska for popmatters.com. Guys, let me ask you, Rudy is a name that you hear in a number of, especially second waves. I mean, The Clash, Horace, you mentioned The Clash before. Mm. Rudy Can't Fail, your cover of A Message to You, Rudy. Tell us who Rudy,
it was the generic name for a rude boy. The rude boy, I always said, the rude boy is like a Jamaican mod, but without the disposable income. You know, that was like the working class or unemployed youth who would sort of hang around street corners until sort of something turned up, or you know, and would occasionally get into trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was, a Jamaican ne'er-do-well, shall we say? But he became sort of, I don't know, lionized, like he was like in popular culture, and you would write songs about him. You know.
Right. And Jennifer, in your article for Pop Matters, you talk about, you know, the fashion that grew up around ska. There came to be later in the 70s and 80s a kind of rude boy look, right?
Which was, yeah, I would very say distinctive. So. And I would say the Specials in the late 70s and the 80s really epitomized that rude boy look.
What was the
always
look?
Always a sharp looking band. And the fashion is really tied to ska music. I mean, especially two-tone ska music, and ska bands today. I mean, there's definitely a ska uniform.
Which is what?
Which would be like, you know, black suit, skinny tie, white shirt, black and white, checkerboards. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the look. But originally, I guess the Rude Boys were kind of Jamaican street toughs, mm-hmm. that, you know, looked sharp and impressive on the street corner, and you wouldn't want to mess with them.
So guys, when you're out on stage tonight at Terminal 5 and look out in the audience, do you think you'll be seeing lots of black and white?
Yeah, we will.
We usually do, yeah.
I think it's fair to comment as well, to bring up the point that a lot of the dress codes came from, in the UK, came from the mod period as well. So you had the tonic fabric suits, the stay pressed trousers, you know, and the Doc Martens, loafer shoes, Loki loafers, and all that. And you know, and the black and white thing did tend to sort of develop a little bit later, I think, along with the.
It did seem to be a two-tone kind of thing.
Sort of thing, yeah.
We're talking about, you know, ska, several waves of ska that have swept through the States and the UK and the world. And Bob here in New York leaves this comment on the Soundcheck page. I like ska for one reason. I don't think you can put a hateful or even negative message in it. It just doesn't fit with the rhythms. You guys agree?
Yeah, it's extremely uplifting music. Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why people will always be listening to it.
The idea of a Specials reunion is something that's been sort of in the air at various points over the years. Horace, what was it that finally allowed this tour to happen?
I think it was an awful lot of hard work and shuttle diplomacy by Linval, our rhythm guitarist, who I think wanted to get the whole thing together for the 25th anniversary, and he sort of tentatively asked a few people, but got sort of a negative reaction from some, but a positive from others. So it was a case of just chipping away and getting everybody, you know, in the same room at the same time, and blahty blahty blah. And it was a real tour de force, and I think it's down to him really that it's got back together.
But there was the goal of celebrating marking the 25th anniversary.
Originally it was the 25th, but that sort of came and went. So it was like, okay, well, how about the 30th? You know, I mean, it could very easily have been the 29th, or it could have been the 31st. You know, there was no sort of, you know, synchronicity about that. It was just like, okay, let's do it on the 30th.
Why were some members of the band hesitant, and in the case of the original keyboardist, a flat no? What was the tentative?
Well, I think some of us had I think all of us had quite a bad experience of being in the music business, and some of us, myself included, had left the music business altogether. I was a school teacher at this time, and some of us had reasonably successful solo careers that would have to be sort of managed, right, or quite possibly put on hold, and we didn't know whether it was going to work. I mean, we had an idea that it was going to work, but we, you know, we weren't sure. So there was a lot of sort of, well, I'll join if you join, you know, I'll join if you join first, you know, uh-huh. and that kind of stuff. So.
But I mean, you know, the music industry, and of course we know it's, you know, lots of sharks swim in that particular water, but the industry was good to you guys. You know, you had all these
really?
International.
That's really debatable.
In terms of what it did, you know, for the profile of the band and hit songs and stuff. I mean, you know, it's. So my question
being,
to you
being
is,
a legend
how
in your
was
own,
it not?
Being a legend in your own lunchtime is fine, but it don't pay the rent.
Okay,
you know,
so was that the issue that somehow all the you know hit songs and you never see any of it?
I think it's we broke up after a tour of America. I mean, we were worked to the bone basically, and by the management. And I think if we'd have been given a bit more pastoral care and attention, then we would have lasted a lot longer. But we just ran out of steam, and it got really awkward at the end. I don't think people forget that in a hurry. Years and years later, you remember those situations. However, we have this 30th anniversary thing, and it's nothing to do with it being the anniversary of Saturday Night Live, for example. It's basically when we did Gangsters 30 years ago. But basically, we have a fan base that want us to do this, and we've proven it by the fact we've just done about, I don't know, about 40-odd gigs in the UK.
All sold out.
And you've never seen so much passion in your life. I mean, it's the most humbling experience I've ever had in my life to see these grown guys and women dancing and enjoying themselves with tears in their eyes, man, sometimes. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Well, there's a lot of younger ska fans, too. Are they showing up to the Specials concerts?
Yeah. Their parents are bringing them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
So, Jennifer, we haven't actually talked about the third wave of ska, which, strangely, seems to have come out of California. Bands like No Doubt, which, you know, Gwen Stefani used as a launching pad for her solo career, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and stuff. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, third wave, I don't want to say that it just came out of California. Some of those bands ended up being the most popular of all of the third wave ska bands. But Mighty Mighty Boston's, for example, out of Boston. Mm-hmm. And
the Toasters in New York,
and a lot of those bands like
Fishbone,
the Toasters and the Boston's were kind of rooted in punk rock or in hardcore music, even honestly. But in terms of kind of the biggest names of that era, yeah, I would say that Sublime and kind of No Doubt were all over the radio at that time. And their roots were definitely in ska music, even if, you know, a lot of people wouldn't maybe call No Doubt a ska band anymore. They definitely had a lot of ska influences to their music.
And that sort of burnt out after a couple of years. And now, as Brad just said, you know, the Specials are out there and they're looking out in the audience and they're seeing full houses, they're seeing a couple of generations of ska fans. Guys, do you think are we now seeing a fourth wave, or is this kind of a revival of the old second wave?
I don't know. I think it's something that's endemic in the music business. It's like time. It's like time has no meaning anymore. You know, we played the Glastonbury Festival in England last year, and the bill was the Fleet Foxes, Lily Allen, the Specials, and Neil Young. Right, there's like sort of 50 years, you know, all sort of combined. You've got something that's very contemporary, something that happened two years ago, something that happened 30 years ago, and something that happens like, you know, like somebody who's even older than us. But it's like, it doesn't matter. It's like the audience isn't sort of polarized like it was 25 years
ago. So the music business now has adopted the sort of Buddhist experience of time as a cycle rather than time as an arrow.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, as if to prove the point, we are about to open the doors to this studio to an enormous band that revisits some classic soul sounds of the 60s and 70s when Kings Go Forth join us. But we've been speaking with Horace Panter and John Bradbury from the band The Specials. They are playing tonight here in New York at Terminal 5. And with us on the phone has been the journalist Jennifer Davis, who's written about ska for popmatters.com. And to the three of you, thanks for being with us on the program
today.
Thank
you. Bye, Jennifer.
Oh, thank
Bye.
You. Thank you so much.
Hey, great.
Tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Mess around in every town, but now they run the room. keep it clean.
As a DJ, Moby created a pulsing sound that made for the best-selling electronica album ever. His 1999 record, Play, sold 10 million copies. As a singer-songwriter, he shows a more introspective side.
Wait for me.
Come watch Moby and his band perform this and other songs at another special soundcheck live from WNYC's Green Space. Tuesday, May 4th at 2 p.m. Get your tickets at wnyc.org/soundcheck.